The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
There's very clear defining lines for me in every role that I play. I don't think anyone exists who's as fearless as Samantha Jones. I mean, but she doesn't really live in our world. You know, yeah. It's a fantastical world. It's a heightened world. And it's a fun world to be Samantha Jones because everything is achievable. It's really about enjoying yourself, having a great time. You know, most people are picking at the hors d'oeuvres and she's at a banquet. You know, that's the wonderful thing about this character. And non-judgmental of all the experiences and all the people that she met. I was just, well, it's not for me. Might be for you, not for me. And she was just sort of a wealth of experience, always speaking from the mount. And I loved playing her. She was very challenging because on television, it was a character, especially for a woman, where no character had gone to those places ever before. And we were turning these taboos, these sexual taboos, into things that, first of all, you can laugh at.
Yeah.
And then you can relate to. And then you can interpret. When it started to become a water cooler moment, they call it in the United States, where, you know, people in any given office are having on a break and they're around the water cooler having a tea or a glass of water or whatever. Yeah. They're talking about
that
show.
Did you see that last night?
Exactly. Oh, my God. And to be sort of the messenger of telling those stories, playing that character, could sometimes be incredibly embarrassing because... You know, I'm a serial monogamist. You know, I don't have the appetite, I don't know who does, of a Samantha Jones. So it started to get, you know, especially when I became single, those lines are blurred. And with television more than movies, you're in someone's living room.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're in reruns. So you feel like, the audience feels like they know you and they can relate to you. But when, you know, I'm on a date or at a dinner party or something, someone comes up and starts talking about a specific storyline, I think, well, you know, actually that didn't happen to me.
Yeah.
Actually, that was written by someone. And so you have to kind of clarify that.
That's Kim Cattrall here on News Talk and talking to me back in 2015 about what it was like to play Samantha Jones in Sex and the City, which is the box set that John Fardy has selected for this week. John, good morning.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. I remember that interview. It was great fun talking to Kim Cattrall. Absolutely. What is it about Sex and the City that makes you want to recommend a revisit?
Because, you know, in a way, we wouldn't have this slot without it. I've said before, you know, The Sopranos kickstarted the golden age of TV. But in a way, Sex and the City paved the way for shows like that. And Kim Cattrall, in a way, made reference to it there when she spoke to you. Like, this was 1998. It's a long time ago in TV terms. Even to have the title Sex in a TV show was kind of revolutionary at the time. And people weren't wild about the idea. And... as I say, it opened up TV to, I suppose, become more adult. And the landscape has never quite been the same again as a result of Sex and the City, I would say. But aside from all that heavy-duty stuff, it was and remains wildly entertaining. And I thought it was wildly entertaining for men as much as women. I mean, there were lots of women who loved it, but I knew lots of guys, and still do, who absolutely adored it. And there's been a lot written about it since, and there's, and maybe we can get into that, how it stands up now. But in short, okay, I think it stands up pretty well.
Well, you've selected a couple of clips, so introduce the first one.
Yeah, this is what it had at its heart was four friends. Now, interesting enough, I'm not sure how friendly it was off scene. And there's a reboot now happening. It's coming to America in late December, where they're going to be in their 50s. But Kim Cattrall is definitively not in it. And it appears relations are not great with her and the remaining cast. But if you park all that in Hollywood fictionalized TV, at its heart, it was a show about friendship, four friends who negotiated the world together, and having these three pals in their life made all the difference. So some of the best scenes in it were about them talking about their romantic lives as friends. So take a listen to this.
Boy, do I have news.
So do I. I didn't want to say anything until we were all together, but Harry and I made up
and he asked me to marry him.
Oh, my God. Oh, congratulations.
Wow, that's great.
Look at that ring.
I know. He had it made based on the one that Richard Burton gave Elizabeth Taylor.
Well, it is fabulous.
Even more fabulous than your first one.
So, Carrie, what was your news?
Oh, Berger broke up with me on a Post-it.
On a Post-it?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yep. Read it and weep, my friends.
I'm sorry I can't. Don't hate me. Concise.
First of all, I thought you were going to break up with him.
Yeah, I was, and I should have, but he said that he wanted to try to work things out, a.k.a. leave in the middle of the night.
A Post-it? That's infuriating.
Yeah, I remember when breaking up over the phone was considered bad form.
I once was broken up with by a guy's doorman. I'm sorry, Miss Hobbs. Jonathan won't be coming down. Ever.
It strikes me. Now, this is fiction. You know, very well, very sharp scripts, well written. But it really leads you all the way to Made in Chelsea and the Kardashians, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm sensing you're not wild about it because you think it's
I just didn't watch it
those
much.
Kind of shows.
No, I just didn't watch it much. I mean, I know the fascination for many people as well as the relationships and the female friendships was, you know, the fashion and the fantasy lifestyle that they led, which was probably never led by any real women anywhere.
No, but it I think people aspire to it afterwards. And there's some academic paper about the growth in brunches since Sex and the City. Almost like, no, I know brunches were around before, but they always brunch and they sat around eating grapefruit and had these glorious breakfasts. And, you know, Carrie Bradshaw's character was half broke a lot of the time, but yet she lived this fabulous life that she could ill afford. And, you know, some of the, I suppose, the criticism of it that's, you know, retrospective been labelled at it, is that we saw very, they were supposedly feminist icons, but at the same time, we didn't see them working that much. It was all about, you know, what they got from their work, the money, and how they lived fabulous lives. That's one of the criticisms of it. Another criticism, and I always thought it was ridiculous, is that it was anti-men. I mean, give me a break. I really thought that was ridiculous. I suppose one criticism that stands, but it's true of possibly every show from the 90s, is there was a lack of diversity. And, these women, they were all, a lot of the time, one of the criticisms leveled at it now is that they were about two things, living a fabulous life and relationships, and that they weren't as fully written as they could have been. But I kind of think you can say that about most characters, to be honest.
It was freed of the shackles of broadcast television because it was on HBO, and a lot of things could happen and can happen on cable that can never happen on broadcast TV.
Absolutely. And the way they talked about sex was incredibly frank for primetime television. And we don't have to get into the specifics now, but things that were talked about in that show had never been talked about on any mainstream show before. And, you know, it's not to overshare, but I remember watching it for the first time in my 20s and I learned things that I'd never known before that I guess stood me in good stead. But it was educational in that way about what went on in bedrooms with men and women at times, you know.
Now, you've another clip to share with us?
Yeah, well, you see, also at its heart, I guess it was a love story over six episodes. And Mr. Big was the great, at times, unrequited love of Carrie's life. And that one of the criticisms about the anti-men thing was that he was never given a name until the very last episode. He was just Mr. Big. And it's finally revealed at the end that his name was John, oddly enough, which I think is a great name for any character, be it fictional or life, you know. But
you would, John Vardy, would you not?
I guess I would. But so they had this long-running affair that he never quite committed to. And then right at the end, he realized that she was the great love of his life and he needed her and she had gone off to France. This is a spoiler, but I think most people know it. And he wanted her back. And this is where Mr. Big goes and sees the three other girls and asks their advice on what he should do.
Look, I need your advice. You three know her better than anyone. You're the loves of her life. And a guy's just lucky to come in fourth. But I do love her. And if you think I have the slightest chance, I'll be on the next plane to Paris. I'll roam the streets until I find her. I'll do anything. But if you think that she really is happy, Well, I wouldn't want to wreck that for her. And I'll be history.
Go get our girl.
Go get our girl. Oh, and that was at the end. Now, some of the texts
and
coming,
he did go and get the girl, you know.
Sex and the City will not be the same on its recreation if there's no Samantha. So says
yeah,
my listener.
She's a serious loss. And for a lot of people, she was, in a way, the most captivating and liberating character. She set herself there. So it is a shame she's uninvolved. But as I say, relations are very poor.
Some of the other texts talking about what you were saying, how innovative and groundbreaking it was. The Sopranos, Sex and the City, Curb Your Enthusiasm, three highly influential turn-of-the-century shows. What three letters do they all have in common? Answer, H, B, and O. HBO.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's from Gavin. Yeah. Oh, thank you, John, says another. Sex and the City was the best series ever. Timeless, such clever and brilliant acting, absolutely faultless. HBO was a game changer. Just look at The Sopranos, so says Rosemary. Now, the other aspect of all of this is whatever happened to the actresses afterwards. Did they ever have careers outside of Sex and the City?
No, they did, absolutely. And Cynthia Nixon ran for governor of New York. Sarah Jessica Parker has done all sorts of things. Kim Pethrell, Charlotte's character. Like, they've all eked out good careers. I mean, it's unlikely that you're ever going to repeat the success of something like that. They've been in movies and done various things. I mean, they're all, apart from Kim Cattrall, coming back for a reboot, so you could argue their careers haven't gone that well. But I imagine that's, you know, unfortunately, a money game. Like, I'm really not a fan of this idea. You know, I always talk to you about the Fawlty Towers rule of 12, like the idea of rebooting Sex and the City, even though I adored it as a show, its six series were completely enough. Like, I don't know where the Mr. Big character goes now, because I have to say, and Sex and the City fans will probably hate me for saying this, but I thought the movies really poured, you know, awful stuff on its legacy, because they were pretty bad. The first one was okay, but the second one was nonsense, and they go to the Far East, and it was just a car crash. So the idea of rebooting it, I've yet to be convinced, I have to say.
By the way, you mentioned what it did for brunch. It probably did lots for Jimmy Choo shoes and for Fendi bags and all the rest of it. And Candace Bushnell, whom I met, she was really the inspiration for the whole thing.
Yeah, she wrote this kind of real-life column, a series of columns, Sex and the City, and I think in the New York Times, and it ran for years, and they just thought, there's something in this. I met her once as well. Fascinating lady. I should say as well that the fashion and this, you know, the cinematography of New York, that was almost a character in and of itself. And now, I don't have this statistically. I'm not sure if there's papers written about this, but, you know, there was a Sex and the City tour in New York. Like, I feel like it brought people to New York. I remember we were on honeymoon in New York, and you'll find this entertaining, Pat. It was a toss-up between would we do the Sex and the City tour or the Sopranos tour, and I won, because we got to do the Sopranos tour. So I'm the only man, I think, who ever went to a strip club with his wife on honeymoon, because they take you to a strip club in the Sopranos tour. So there you go.
Final postscript from one of the listeners. The movies were awful and undid the happy endings of the series. So says that listener. John, what's on screen time this week?
Well, I have Ridley Scott and Jodie Comer on their new movie, The Last Duel, for an interview about his great new movie. And he's kind of honest about why he filmed in Ireland and the taxes and all that kind of stuff. So it's a good interview.
And that sounds fascinating. And that's on air on Saturdays, 6 to 7, and available as a podcast on Fridays, starting at 5 o'clock. John Fardy, host of Screen Time, thank you very much for reminding us of the joys of Sex and the City.